welcome to the Laravel IO podcast. My name is Sean McCool, and I'm here with Taylor Otwell and Jeffrey Way. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a long time.
Yes, this is the most sought-after podcast edition we've ever done.
It's weird. I think people actually listen to this podcast. I get a lot of tweets about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I know awesome. You know the number, Sean, but I have no idea who listens to this podcast.
This is definitely very in demand, though. I've gotten a lot of people pinging me asking when the next Laravel.io podcast is. So we have faithful listeners devoted to our cause.
Well, thank you, faithful listeners, for listening faithfully.
So what's up?
Well, I thought maybe you kick it off with telling us about your new lifestyle change.
Yeah, big lifestyle change. So recently I went on vacation to Florida, which was great. We had great weather and I worked on Laravel at night. It was like this perfect Laravel bliss, all week, and I got to enjoy the beach during the day. But while I was at the beach, I had actually thought about, you know, Laravel's future and stuff and just how I wanted to take Laravel forward and what things I wanted to be involved in and so forth. And, one of the things I actually thought about was going part-time on Laravel, proposing some kind of part-time gig to Ian at Userscape, which would basically be an increase. I'm already on 20% Laravel time, or I was with Userscape, which was basically donated on the behalf of Userscape since I was still paid for that time. But, you know, I wanted to increase that to 50%, you know, some kind of every other week or every 2 weeks or whatever, but an increase in that time that I had on Laravel. But I wasn't sure how that would really go over with Ian. Well, things kind of worked out in a way where he kind of proposed that to me after I got back. You know, since Laravel is getting pretty large and requires more and more time, especially with various side projects like Forge and Envoy and even Cashier and stuff has pull requests sitting out there that I haven't really been able to get to. And so, long story short, now I am 50% Userscape, 50% Laravel. So every other week I work entirely on Laravel. And of course the other weeks I work entirely on basically Snappy at Userscape, which is cool because I kind of get to work on, you know, both things. And, it's kind of a nice little setup. So this is my first week on Laravel. I've already done like a ton, even though I'm only halfway through my second day. But it's been really awesome. It's going to allow me to devote so much more time to the framework, really more time than I've ever devoted to Laravel since I'll be spending literally half the year working on it. So it's going to be pretty awesome, I think. And we'll just not only help me polish up what's out there, you know, existing stuff, which – maintaining pull requests and just adding general polish to the overall branding and ecosystem, but then also kind of being involved in some new things and new ideas for community stuff and conference stuff and all that. So I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, you'll have time to tackle stuff that you probably just never had time before. All that stuff where it's like, yeah, I'd love to get to that, but, you know, there's only so many hours in a day.
Yeah, stuff that was essentially just dreams, you know, just to like, oh, wouldn't it be nice? Or like, even if I could just hire someone to do some of this other stuff, you know, but now I can actually focus on some stuff myself that I never would have even thought possible before.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, when you think Laravel's gotten to where it is right now on part-time work, I mean, oh, that's crazy, especially when you think about, like, all right, now that you have full time to put toward this, or at least, you know, 2 weeks out of the month, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what you have stored up your sleeve.
Yep, it's going to be pretty cool. You know, gosh, I mean, you can just get so much done even with just 1 week of total focus on something and to be able to build momentum throughout the week. So, yeah, I can't imagine – you know, I've basically more than doubled my time on the framework. And most people that run open source projects don't get any time at all. You know, it's all on their own. And even 20% time was pretty nice to be able to keep up mainly with GitHub issues and pull requests. I didn't really have a lot of time to explore new ideas or do anything kind of interesting. It was mainly just kind of like fire patrol on GitHub. But now I can actually explore some more interesting things.
Ian provided a lot of time for you to work on Laravel, but even before that, do you have any thoughts on like what a slow moving project can accomplish, like slow but steady versus just putting it all your time into it? Like sometimes it feels like, you know, we have to do.
Yeah, I think it can still, code-wise, it can still accomplish a lot. I mean, so many projects have, but to do like other things, like supporting things, even things like Homestead, or especially things like Alaricon or something like that, takes so much time investment that it's hard to do part-time. I think if you just focus on pure code and not really any other community activity things, you can do quite a bit. But when you start throwing other things into the mix, and then even like other products into the mix, like Laravel Forge, it becomes really hard to maintain on your own. But yeah, I mean, we probably could have sustained Laravel as things were. You know, we probably could have kept the ship going and afloat, so to speak. But in order to like really press ahead, which I think Laravel's, or at least I've always tried to have kind of a focus on always kind of staying on top of things and pushing things forward and not letting things stagnate, then I think this will open up or make that a lot easier.
It's incredible just how much time it takes to maintain like an open source project. We have like this backup manager that Mitchell and I work on, and we have every intention of continuing to work on it and improving it, and that's happening. But it feels like progress is so incredibly slow because we need to be, you know, looking at people's issues, their pull requests, working our normal lives, and actually making the changes we need to make takes a serious amount of time. And I wonder, sometimes people have, you know, a half of a dozen or more actual open source projects out that's actively being supported. And it's just, it's remarkable to me just how much effort it takes. There are times when somebody, you know, in our team says we should release this as a package or something, and I think I cannot handle supporting another open source project.
Yeah, especially like the types of things we're talking about, like even a database backup package. Like you have so many people with so many different database setups, and same way with Laravel, like people have so many different ways of wanting to do things that these kind of packages, I think, are especially hard to maintain because you just have so many different voices and opinions on that kind of thing. Whereas when you have like a really opinionated library, like, like just like an API wrapper or something, like that's, you know, you can be, the issues are not going to be rushing in, you know, as long as there's no like outstanding bugs, it's going to be a pretty stable thing and no one's really going to complain about much. But yeah, these type of technical, like frameworky type things are, have so much so much GitHub activity to them.
So, are you excited about Laracon, Taylor?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm a there's so many speakers. It's gonna be so cool because I don't know. It's just there's such a big variety of topics, such a big variety of speakers that I think everyone's gonna be able to find something that like really interests them or that they really want to hear. So, I'm really excited. I'm excited to meet everyone. It's always fun to meet everyone from Twitter and IRC and the interwebs in general.
It's really interesting. You have a lot of topics, and I love going to presentations and getting somebody's insight into something that maybe I didn't mess with. But when you have like this Twitter feed of all these people, and you know, you hear people talking in the PHP community and everything online, and then you actually get to meet them, that's to me my favorite part.
Yeah, the social aspect is always just so much fun. Just kind of, I mean, even if there was a conference where there was no talks and it was just hanging around, like I would still probably go to that conference just because it's it's fun just to sit around and kind of chat with people about, you know, life and what they're working on and programming, whatever. So I think the talks are almost just like the seeds for the social conversations you have in between.
It's tough though. I would think like as an organizer of a conference, you have to like, you're dealing with so many different personality types. So you have the people who they really are, they're going there to learn, you know, and usually conferences maybe aren't the best way to do that. But then you have people that are going because it's kind of a business vacation. You have people going just to socialize. So I would imagine like as somebody organizing these conferences, it's tough because everyone has different expectations. So some people, they're just not into the socializing aspect. That's not what they're there for.
Yeah, we had that with Laracon New York actually where, I mean, before the conference, I kind of had it, like I said, in my mind where it's mainly about the social thing and the networking and the talks. I mean, we want to have good talks, but it's kind of half and half, so to speak. But I mean, we did get email responses after the conference. I mean, not a lot, but we had one or two people that felt like they came to Laravel conference or Laracon basically not knowing Laravel, and they wanted to learn Laravel at Laracon, and they were disappointed that they felt like they didn't. And yeah, that's basically like an impossible problem to solve because
it's not what it's for. Yeah.
So many different types of people and different intentions coming to the conference. But yeah, the vast majority of people are going to have a great time and love it.
I honestly think if I could do one thing at Laracon that I wasn't able to do this year, it would be to actually provide workshops for completely beginner Laravel education, basically.
Yeah. That would be cool. I could see, especially companies or small like freelance shops that are just getting into Laravel or want to send a team of developers to get up to speed, that would be a really good value.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams. Like I know of a company who's out here that they're converting this really very narrowly focused group of developers into the web app support team, and they're going to be working with Laravel. So they're looking for somebody to really just say, hey, this is PHP, this is object-oriented design, this is Laravel, you know, and just kind of get people on base. And I think there's probably a lot of that going on.
Yeah, more and more, as Laravel is kind of, you know, it started out as kind of something individuals were using, and now that it's really infiltrated a lot more corporations, yeah, I think we'll see more and more of that.
So, Jeffrey, I'm really sad that I won't be able to see you this summer, but I have to thank you so much for you and, you know, your work with Laracast and helping support the conference with your sponsorship.
Yeah, I'm so sad I can't go. This will be the first conference that I haven't attended, or actually the first one I've never spoken at. So, yeah, I'm going to miss it. It just turned into one of those things. I have a family engagement that I can't get out of. It's been on the books for months. So I'm very sad about that. I will definitely be back if there's a Europe conference next year, or at least at the very least one in the U.S., because I do love going.
Sounds like a perfect opportunity for a kidnapping.
Yeah,
make a note about that.
I am not an accomplice if something weird happens in the future.
What if Jeffrey really did get kidnapped, but it was just like totally coincidence? I would be like a suspect in that.
Yeah, the prime suspect. I have to say I had nothing to do with any of this.
My wife would be like, Jeff, it's funny you got kidnapped, but I see that you were speaking here the day that you were kidnapped. Like, oh, I don't know anything about that.
they kidnapped you and forced you to speak.
Like, oh, I don't have a talk prepared. Talk.
Just start.
Talk about Laravel drama, kidnappings.
So we actually sold out today.
Congratulations,
Laracon E. Thank you.
That's good news.
And if anybody's listening and they wanted a ticket but they weren't able to get one, I highly recommend you go to the website as fast as possible and join the waiting list, because it is not infrequent that somebody can't make it and they ask for a refund for their ticket. So tickets are going to be opening up even to, you know, just before the event starts. So if you sign up for that waiting list, first come, first serve, I'll be emailing people out, and hopefully I hear from them quickly, or else I have to go to the next people. But that's kind of how it's going to roll. But it's going to be a packed house, and there's going to be a lot of interesting people to talk to and learn from. So I'm really excited about that. We're trying something new this year. So last year we did a day and a half, and this year we're doing 3 full days. So it's actually quite a bit more to organize, many more speakers, 12 speakers at the main event. And then the day before the main event, we're having a community day. And that's kind of an interesting experiment. We're trying to see if we can, you know, give a bunch of community members a chance to talk, first of all, and then give people a chance to, you know, discuss many different topics. So we're going to have a number of full-length talks, but then a lot of lightning talks too, that you can choose to between this, that, and that talk to go to a couple tracks of lightning talks. So I hope it's going to be a lot of fun. I heard that Taylor was going to give a kind of a Q&A type panel situation. So a lot of people you can come out there and troll him all you'd like, please.
I love Q&As. I think those are one of my favorite things to do. That sounds really like, gosh, I don't know. That didn't come out right.
I love it when I'm the
center of attention and people ask me questions. No, but I just really like fielding questions, because you just get so many people ask good questions, like thought-provoking questions, I find, a lot of the time.
Yeah, my favorite part of giving a talk is always the end, when, you know, you get to discuss some idea with somebody else instead of just broadcast one direction.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's kind of the skinny with Laracon. What else we have lined up? Let's see here. Laravel IO, and I feel like I should, you know, bring this up. Originally, Nick Spelt and I put together the original Laravel IO, and he did the design, and I did some of the back-end stuff, and we got that all running. But more lately, we just, you know, with Laracon and just everything else, we haven't really had time to work on it. My associate Mitchell and I had been building this next version branch with a lot of new ideas and things that we were learning. And that ended up being like our playground for trying to figure out a bunch of new ideas. What ended up happening is we had like three or four different techniques all mixed together. And our goal was to go back and unify it because we knew what was going on because we were deeply in the code base. But unfortunately, we didn't find the time to continue working on it. But we did find somebody who's a long-standing, you know, Laravel community member. His name is Dries Fince, and he is behind Laravel Weekly, and he has been helping very, very seriously with both Laracon EU conferences. He's just a stand-up guy, and he has a lot of ideas and a lot of motivation to keep working on that system. And the way he wants to take it is he doesn't want to go out and clean up after our mess, which I don't blame him, because like I said, there's like four different algorithms in there for like the same fundamental concept because we were just trying new ideas. And so that's the next version branch went away. I moved a backup to my own personal GitHub account. So if anybody wants to look at that, that's there. But he's going to be managing that system. And so I'm very happy to kind of pass those reins on to him. I know he'll do a great job. And that's kind of the future of Laravel IO right now.
Nice. Laravel.io. I get that help system is pretty cool. I've used that a few times with IRC.
How does that work? What help system?
They people on Laravel IO can like fill out a few like questions about their problem, and so it gives you like more context instead of just like a paste dump of their code, which can be pretty useful sometimes when you're debugging stuff.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, I think it's mostly used by the IRC support channel, and you can find that form at help.laravel.io, and it just gives them in IRC a chance to actually understand what you're talking about.
It is amazing when developers don't naturally know how to ask for help. You would think they would be the most sensitive to these things. Like, all right, you can't just spit out 500 lines of code and expect me to debug it. You know, nobody wants to do that. But people do it over and over. Or they're so bad that they won't even leave a code snippet. It just baffles my mind a little bit. We know better than this stuff. So it's weird when developers are constantly doing that. When you have to say, can you send me a code example? Like countless times. It drives me nuts a little bit.
Is honestly. Jeffrey with some PTSD? Yeah.
I have to deal with it a lot. I'm not, you know, knocking anyone, but it happens so much. This is just basic stuff. If you want help, we need to see some code, and that doesn't mean 1,000 lines of that you just copied and pasted.
The hard part for me is translating what somebody's saying into a language I understand, because it's not that, you know, they don't have an idea what they're doing, and they're telling me, they're giving me enough information, you know, a lot of times, but it's trying to translate that into something that makes sense to me, because we're just... So we have such different experiences and everything that the communication is just broken. So you end up going back and forth with 20 questions, trying to get a basic idea of what's even happening.
One of the hard ones is when somebody is like, hey, I did a Composer install and it errored out. And it's like, you know how it gets weird. Like you're pulling in some package, but that's referencing a different version than another package. And it gets kind of confusing. I hate dealing with those. Because many times it's like you can read it, but sometimes you just have to do trial and error to figure out what you need.
Ugh. Well, it's debugging, man. You got to go back to the latest working thing and isolate until you figure out what breaks.
Yes, but not with somebody else's code. I'm talking about like support.
No, I'm talking about them.
I don't have time to figure this out. You do.
I'm not sure, but I feel like PHP Storm could help us with this problem somehow.
Wow.
Hey, speaking of that, did you guys see that there's now Blade support in PHP Storm?
Yeah, it's only the PHP Storm 8 EAP.
Doesn't everybody use the EAP? It's actually pretty reliable. I know, like, it's buggy, but Most
that's
of the
like
time,
Sublime Tech's nightly build. Like, everyone's on the nightly build. Why else why would you be on any other thing?
Yeah, I don't. I just need all those nice PHP Storm 8 features. But at the same time, there have been times, like the previous EAP before this one, the audio complete would crash. And so you get this little notification in the corner saying, oh, this part of your IDE crashed. It's amazing that how much PHP Storm is like its own operating system, though. You know, it handles everything. You can go and browse plugins, install plugins, send error messages, everything. I have a feeling if Sublime Text crashed, there ain't nothing happening. It's just boom.
And if I remember right, that was a weird one where, like, the solution was to disable some different plugin. I think it was disable the new Behat plugin, and then suddenly it's back.
Yeah, that was the EAP before. Stuff. That's exactly. I had that. See, it's just not the EAP is just not that stable. It's stable enough to where I'll use it, but what I do is I install them all into versioned folders and then link one to my current version. So if it ever gets bad, I just blow away the link and link to an older version. And I'm good to go.
Did you guys ever experiment with Atom when that came out?
No.
Only when it first came out, so I don't feel like I have a very good understanding of what it's like now.
Mm-hmm.
With PHP Storm, though, I pulled up Sean's video, one of Sean's videos. He was, I can't remember which video it was, but he was using PHP Storm, and I swear it's like, I don't have the same PHP Storm y'all have, or something like.
You have to tweak it a lot.
You have to own it.
Where you want.
It's a long-term, situation. It just is.
That's funny.
It's worth
Taylor,
it.
I know you're trying it out. Like, has it stuck at all, or no, not at all?
Not
like you
yet.
Said, you hated Vagrant for months, and then suddenly Homestead came out. So,
yeah, I know.
Are we going to see some kind of Taylor-specific PHP Storm syntax or something?
I doubt it, but I mean, gosh, never say never. I just need to own it. I need to own it. I think like I'm just downloading it and opening it, and I see all these things that I don't understand, and I'm just like,
you hide all of it. At least my approach is like almost treat it like it's Vim. So the cool thing is every single thing is configurable. So if you don't like some kind of error highlighting, you can hide it completely. So I get rid of every single icon. I get rid of the sidebar. I get rid of the tabs. I break it down to where it's almost exactly like Sublime if you hide the sidebar.
I couldn't agree with Jeffrey Moore. This is exactly what I think about PHP Storm.
And then because I used Sublime for so long, and I still do, I map all of the Sublime shortcuts like Command-P and stuff like that. I map that over to PHP Storm so that if I need to switch between the two, which I do, it's fine. There's no problem there remembering what the shortcuts are. Yeah. But it takes a while. I played with my installation for hours getting it exactly the way I wanted it to.
Yeah. Gosh, maybe that can be my next Laravel week, getting my PHP Storm up to par. Also, though, with Sublime Text, I saw that there was that recent update on the forums that not only was the guy still working on it, but he actually has plans for a Sublime Text 4, which was interesting.
He does. That guy's pretty crazy. I think he basically does everything on his own. I think he has one helper dude. Or woman, but I think it's just mostly support. He's like the editor version of you, Taylor.
Yeah,
except
I mean,
he's not very vocal. Like, I never see him on Twitter. He doesn't talk very much.
No, he's like up in some monastery somewhere. He does have a lady that, like one staff member that I guess she said she manages, I guess, kind of the day-to-day business operations, which I'm guessing means like payments and you know, business stuff. But that with Sublime Text 4, he planned to hire more people to work on the software itself. I don't know. So who knows?
You do wonder why he doesn't promote it a little bit more. It's like Sublime is so good. It's a little weird that like he's just kind of nowhere to be found. And from what I see, there's not much marketing other than just word of mouth, which I guess is the best. But it still seems like, man, you should be promoting this a little bit more. Or I think about like TextMate was like the de facto editor for the Mac years ago, and it completely disappeared. It's just weird, like, how does that happen? I know TextMate 2 came out, but it was like totally different, and it was years too late, and it wasn't as good as even the original at the time because they were rebuilding everything. It's just so sad to think, like, how did that happen? Or the same thing like with Blockbuster. I think about Blockbuster all the time. How did Blockbuster go through the tubes? Wasn't there somebody at the company that was thinking, like, man, we got to be careful with this? But no, like Netflix comes around, Hulu, and Blockbuster, like, they're just, I don't know. It's
done,
like they're,
it's over.
I know they have like all of their energy invested into that old model that nobody is sitting there thinking, actually, this is kind of going away. We need to push this new thing. I have no idea why we're talking about Blockbuster.
I think it's actually super relevant.
But it's basically the same thing as Sublime.
This is just the nature of the things, and we have a lot to learn from this, really. What happens is, I think that you have this infrastructure that's built up and it needs to be supported. And you become a little bit of a slave to try to feed into the best interests of others or other groups or other parts of the machine. And, you know, you lose by being virtue of being popular and, thoroughly used, like, for example, Laravel. I think that you fundamentally do lose freedom to just go crazy and be out in left field. Do what you think is right, you know?
Yeah,
for sure.
Or like where, in the case of Blockbuster, anything out of left field would almost be opposite of their main business model, and they can't have that. But I don't know. I think about it a lot.
Taylor, how do you handle you were talking earlier about the stagnation of Laravel and how you really want to make sure that that doesn't happen. How do you handle the fact that it needs to not change very much? But yeah. Do you generally feel like you really wish you could do a lot more, or how does that work?
Good question.
Not so much with the internal aspects. However, as you will see at Laracon EU, there is quite a few changes to the default app structure in Laravel/Laravel, which that's kind of as far as the internal like framework core goes, so to speak, that's not really a concern of the framework. Like, it doesn't really care how all that stuff is organized. But in terms of the default app layout that we're shipping to people, I feel like is pretty dated, and it's maybe inspired by ideas that are kind of falling out of use, or were really Rails ideas that, are I don't know, just falling out of use, I would say. And the terminology is not good, as we've long discussed, you know, in my book and in various other books. The whole idea of having this folder just simplistically named models is kind of weird, and there's just a few other strange things about it. It's very Rails-inspired, and I feel like it's very dated. So with Laravel 4.3, we are going to make some changes on that front. I don't feel like the Laravel core has anything that just jumps out to me. It's, every time I see it, it's just an eyesore, like, I wish it wasn't this way, because it really is kind of a flexible system at the heart of things, just the way things are set up with the container and all that. But yeah, the Laravel app structure is going to change quite a bit. And the cool thing about that is, like you said, things can't change too much or it's just a pain. But since the app structure is not really like a core thing, I can actually keep it entirely backwards compatible with 4.2. So basically there will be no backwards compatibility breaks with your 4.2 apps, because you don't really have to move to this new app structure. I mean, you can if you want to with your 4.2 app. But all new 4.3 apps will kind of ship with this a little bit different structure to them by default.
So if I wanted to upgrade, like, for example, the Laracast code base is 4.2. If I wanted to upgrade to 4.3, I could stick with the existing directory structure, and
yes,
there would be no problem.
Yep, I actually upgraded a 4.2 app just to verify that. It just took me, just a few minutes to upgrade from 4.2 to 4.3, and I didn't adopt any of the new directory layout ideas. It was just, I just kept it. And because, I mean, a lot of people, rearranging the directory structure is not like a high priority thing. You might already have your own custom directory structure you like. So it's just kind of something you can not upgrade immediately, but take advantage of the other Laravel 4.3 features that have nothing to do with that. And then when you get, some spare time, you can say, I guess we'll move to the new folder structures if you want. So,
but for all new installs, that's what you'll have, right?
Yeah, the new installs, and kind of like, okay, this is kind of our new thinking on how we think a decent default layout it should be shipped will be in 4.3. And of course, you'll have the same ability to change all that up if you want, but it just makes more sense. Like, when I look at Laravel 4.3, and I type, let's say I have the Laravel installer thing, and I type Laravel new blog, or Laravel new app, I'm not probably not going to change anything in this whole directory structure right now. Like just looking at it, I feel like it's just a really solid setup for any kind of app. I mean, even if it's just a simple CRUD app or like a more advanced, robust app.
Speaking of Laravel new, like I get a lot of comments where people are going, wait a minute, how did you do that? For anyone listening, if you don't know what that is, just go to the installation guide. I don't mean to be condescending, but it's like literally the installation tab in the documentation will show you this little downloadable utility that you can use. And that way, from then on, you just say Laravel new and then your project name, and it will immediately scaffold a new project. And it's way faster than if you built it through Composer. So you'll be up and running in like 10 or 15 seconds. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's on my list of things to right now it's a far file, like a PHP archive file, but I want to convert it to be like Envoy, where it's just like a global Composer install file. It's just easier to maintain, and the libraries to build those far files are, I wouldn't say they're like abandoned, but they're just not super highly maintained. So I want to move it to that and then just kind of promote that a little more, because that is pretty nice. And it builds, what it does basically is it Composer installs every night and builds a zip file so that you always have a pretty fresh installation of, a nightly build basically. And then so it just downloads that zip and unzips it. But all your Composer dependencies were already zipped up with the package. So it's just like super fast to get a new project.
It's pretty cool.
But with Laravel 4 too, I feel like, not to beat the dead horse too much, but when I came into a Laravel 4.2 app, or really just 4.0 plus app, I immediately like started deleting directories and like setting up various namespacing things and Composer things on every project. And we were even to the point where we were basically recommending like changing the default thing. Even in the documentation, we were recommending like if you have a project that's even a little bit non-trivial, you're going to want to build these custom service providers, and you're going to want to do this, and you're going to want to do that, and you want to get rid of your models directory. So it's just like, if we're to the point where the documentation is recommending these alternative things, like maybe we should just kind of change a few things up so that's better by default.
That's true. Especially when the default install, it talks about service providers, but the default install doesn't really encourage you to use them unless you already know what they are. So that'll be
at all.
I think it's really good. I think it may be a little jarring for folks at first, but we're talking 5 or 10 seconds and then you're good. You know, there will be a little bit of that like, oh, where's this directory? But once you figure it out, you're done and you'll be in a better place.
I think. It's just faster overall. It's just faster to develop in. It's faster to find things.
More intuitive.
Yeah.
It actually teaches you how to use it actually.
Yeah. It teaches you how to really use Laravel instead of just like right now. I don't want to give it too much away because part of the fun is the Laracon stuff, but right now, like, say you want to register like some event listeners, like there's nowhere to do that besides like cramming it. You could cram it in a start file, like start global, but those start files are just like bloated flat files that get, if you have a project that's even just a little bit complicated, you're going to want to get organize those and get maybe even organize them into service providers. So yeah, it's just better overall, and you don't have to just basically come into a fresh project and start deleting stuff.
Or people add them to their routes.php file, and yeah,
totally.
Which is fine for small stuff, but
yeah,
it really helps the problem of like, where do I put this?
Yes. Routes.php is the go-to.
Yeah, it's going to solve that problem a lot, which has always been a huge problem. I mean, since Laravel 1, it's been, where do I put this class? Where do I put that class? So, yeah, this should hopefully solve a lot of issues.
Well, that sounds really, really cool. And I really love how the new service provider stuff is. So I'm excited about it coming out.
Yeah, for sure. There's some stuff I haven't told you about, Sean. I think I'm going to show at Laracon I haven't shown Jeffrey either, but it's going to be really cool, I think, for anyone that uses events.
Nice.
Real quick, though, like on that note of service providers, just from me running Laracast, I've learned that the term is a little scary to people. Like they don't really understand what it is. This new thing is going to help you. Like you're going to get it like that. Yeah. So if that term is weird to you, like it's not. It's pretty basic stuff. It's just kind of a bootstrap. You'll learn to like this. And I think it's going to make you a better developer, because you're going to learn, like, all right, this is a good place to do this stuff, rather than always defaulting to global.php for everything, which isn't a good idea. You know, it's kind of, I call it lazy programming. It's like, oh, you don't want to deal with it. Just throw it in there and sweep it under the rug. So yeah. This will help you a lot.
I feel like this is a, one way to put it would be to say this is a sustainable directory structure, so that the default directory structure that we've had in the past was fine for small apps, but it wasn't sustainable for something like anything real, basically, like a Snappy or a Forge or anything you're building that has any size to it. And I think this is a directory structure that is sustainable even on large applications, would be a fine directory structure to even stick with and not change at all.
Very cool.
What else we got?
Matt Machuga asked a question. How do you discuss ideas like in a technical sense, like what you do in an engineering context, without sounding like you're in a fight or seeming like you're squabbling? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This you mean how do you so disagree with people?
Yeah, yeah, it's not just disagree, because I think in order to really kind of get at the meat of an idea, you have to play the best cards you have. And so maybe you believe in a certain thing and somebody else believes in something else. And it's not that you're trying to really defend yourself. You're just trying to represent the ideas that you have as well as you can, so that, you know, in the battlefield, you can derive new information. I just think that, yeah. For example, on Twitter, this happens all the time. You'll be discussing ideas and you're not sure if people are angry or what's going on.
You know where you see this just as much as programming is parenting.
Oh, it's worse. It's so much worse.
And it's the exact same thing. Like, it's hard to express an idea without feeling like you're in, or the other person
you're
feeling insulted
is,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's so hard to do.
I think just, it's ridiculous, but I think just making smiley faces is enough. Or, like, there's some guys on Twitter if you're worried that somebody's going to take it the wrong way, just tweet them and say, just so you know. You know, because it's really hard with text. You really don't know if they're being arrogant or condescending or what. And usually, most of the time, everyone is being nice. Like, nobody is really trying to be cruel, but sometimes, I don't know if it's our own things, like we interpret it that way as being a little more aggressive than we think. And in reality, everyone has a smile on their face. I'm a big fan of just smiley faces, but yeah. I sound like a kid.
I think there's also like a English as a first language type barrier there sometimes. I see that a lot, like living where I do now. Sometimes people can be communicating on Twitter or something and it comes across a little bit differently tonally than maybe you would expect or maybe that they feel.
Yeah, sometimes it does. Sometimes it comes across more like less like friendly conversation and more like monotone, terse, like serious. You know what I mean?
Well, we all lived/live in the southeastern United States, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's like
it's
very
a cultural thing.
Yeah.
It is huge because like I've noticed that too, like even like honking at someone down here in the South would be
rude.
A big offense, like you would have to do something pretty bad, I feel like. And people would react like, oh my, you just honked at me. Like they would freak out. I mean, might even flip you off just for a honking at you.
No, so, it's true. It's so funny you brought this up. I was talking to my wife like 2 days ago about how annoying I think honking is, because most of the time when people honk, it's like, all right, that wasn't necessary. You should honk if it's like, all right, you're about to get in a wreck. But people sometimes honk for no reason. It's like, is your life that bad that you have nothing better to do than honk because you had to like wait for half a second before, you know, the person in front of you started going? And I think it really is a cultural thing because, like, for example, when I worked at Envato before this, they're an Australian company and it's just a little bit different. They're a little more direct. So they're a little more like, I'm just going to tell you as it is. And if it hurts your feelings, then fine, but you need to hear this. That's a little more of that. And where, like, in America, especially in the South, it's more like, I'd rather not hurt your feelings, so I won't say anything at all, which maybe is worse, but it's just a different cultural thing. But it is like, true. There's a difference there.
In some places, honking is a courtesy. Like, it's offensive. I mean, it's a courtesy to honk to let them know, like, oh, we can go now. I mean, I've heard of people in other countries saying that about honking. And it kind of the same way, like, sometimes I feel like, me personally, I have a hard time not taking every programmer honk personally, so to speak. Like if they mention something that, hey, this, I think this different idea, like it's hard not to take it like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you just honked at me like that. You know what I mean? But and to them, it's probably like just like friendly courtesy, like honk, honk, here's a different idea. But I don't know. That's really cheesy, but.
Well, no, it's valid. I think the hard thing is like it's all of the above. So there are some people where it's just friendly honks, and then there are some people where sometimes it feels like it's less about like helping you out or presenting ideas and more about like putting themselves above your code. And that's where sometimes I have a problem with it. It does feel that way with certain people. And I guess that's just a normal thing, you know. Twitter represents all of us, but I pick up both.
Well, excellent. Speaking of opinionatedness, what do you guys think? I know that, Jeffrey, you've worked with it. Taylor, did you mention that you haven't really had a chance to pick up much with PHP spec lately?
No, I haven't been able to look at it. I want to look at it. Everyone
Taylor,
says it's awesome.
You and I were talking about PHP spec like a year and a half ago.
We were?
Yes.
Oh, you're in trouble.
I know. I'm really behind on PHP testing. I use PHP unit and mockery, and of course sometimes PHP unit mocks, but yeah, I need to get up on the PHP spec. Awesome sauce, apparently.
I really like it. Like, it's the key is it's not for everything. So with PHP unit, like, if you want to do isolated unit tests, you're good. If you even want to do things like functional testing, like Laravel has all of those helpers, like this call or this assert response, okay. That's cool with PHP unit. PHP spec's not for that. It really is for, like, these isolated tests where you're more interested in the messages that one object sends to another as opposed to just kind of going more from an outside-in point of view. Like, for that, you would use, I don't know, presumably Codeception or Behat or PHP unit if you want. But if you just want to break it down to thinking about behavior and messages, PHP spec has been really beneficial for me.
Hmm.
Also, it's really... Like Sean was saying, it's super opinionated, so it's going to, kind of like you said, it's going to honk at things that you think should be perfectly normal. But from what I've seen, like, when it's honking, it's kind of steering you in the right direction. So, for example, like, as a Laravel user, if you're trying to create a PHP spec test that uses facades, it's going to be tough. So instead, it's going to encourage you to instead, like, inject the underlying class behind the facade into this class the way you normally would in your domain.
Yeah.
So just little things like that can really help. Plus, of course, it has just some of the better syntax. So things like, I don't know, this method, and then you specify the argument should return. So when you write that, I know it's hard to visualize that. Think this method, whatever arguments you expect it, should return this array. So when you do that, it will automatically set the expectation for you rather than having to use something like mockery. So from that way, it's sort of like Laravel, where within your test, you type hint whatever you want to mock. So if you need, like, you want to set an expectation on a file system class, you would type hint file system within your test method, and then behind the scenes, PHP spec will automatically mock it so that you can set your expectations on it. So it can simplify your code quite a bit.
That's interesting. So now, is it using, I mean, is it like its own test system? It's not using PHP unit or anything like that under the hood?
I don't think so. No.
No, it's running its own assertions, but it uses Prophecy, which is basically its sister project for mocking. And Prophecy is really what will kick your butt. The rest is PHP spec is pretty lenient and everything, but when you're dealing with mocking and everything, it's kind of crazy. The thing about PHP spec is really interesting because it's this. What PHP spec actually is basically a system that wraps everything ever. So when you call this and the role function, it's actually going to run that role function against your class. But it does that by, you know, intercepting that call, and then it runs it on your class, and then it wraps the response in a type of another type of object that you can then call assertions against. So it's actually kind of weirdly complicated in how it works, but at the same time, the code's really easy to read and understand, and there's not a lot of it. It's a simple application, really well written.
I've found that confuses a lot of people.
What, so like, the part that's wrapping everything?
Yeah, so like, for people listening, imagine that you have some kind of test class, like, I don't know, file system test or whatever. So when you reference the this keyword within that test class, it's not ultimately going to refer to that class. Behind the scenes, they're doing a little bit of trickery so that it's actually going to refer to the actual file system class that you're testing. So that can be a little tricky, but once you just accept, okay, that's what it does, it actually makes for pretty readable code. And it actually makes for like how you would use it in real life. So it's good documentation in that way.
And the thing about it is the PHP spec tests are so much easier to read, in my opinion. I have basically completely switched to PHP spec because our shop is basically all TDD now, and PHP spec is perfect for that. But if you're going in working in some legacy system that really can't be tested using like Prophecy and whatnot because of the limitations it has, the intentional limitations, then you really still are going to have to use PHP unit. I think that PHP spec is really only useful if you're either taking a test first approach or some approach that is close to test first and discipline, etc.
Or of course, like don't use Prophecy. Like if you want to use PHP spec in that way, you can still pull in Mockery and do manual mocking, but it's sort of not what it was intended for.
Yeah, it's a little clunky because, yeah, I can't talk.
No, me too.
Yeah, it's a little clunky because with PHP spec, you have this let method, and you can inject all these things and set expectations and determine how your object's built, and then reuse those same objects later in your other tests by just type hinting those same variables and everything. And I think that Prophecy and PHP spec really should go together. That's my opinion. I don't understand a situation in which you would really kind of use PHP spec in Mockery, but
if you have completed code that you want to test with PHP spec, that might be your only way.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, if you're doing TDD, then yeah, PHP spec is a no-brainer. But if that code is already constructed and you don't have a huge amount of flexibility, or you're trying to write regression tests, then it's very difficult with PHP spec.
Well, I guess it's about time to wrap up. Thanks to you guys so much for coming back on. It was nice to talk to you after such a long drought.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys.
Thanks. I missed you.
Until next time.